progress in treating this as a medical condition and preventing overdose death. I am encouraged lately over the last decade where we have many more policies. We have interesting collaborations where law enforcement is getting more involved in the medical side as well, rather than treating drug use as some purely type of criminal moral failing, right? This is a problem when you look at 100,000 overdose deaths per year that affects a huge part of the U.S. population. And it is very important for us to keep continuing to find ways and policies that treat people with respect and reduce the damage that some of this harmful drug use can cause.
Dr. Lundberg, thanks.
Thank you again, Doug.
That was my conversation with Dr. Alexander Lundberg, an assistant professor of emergency medicine at the Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine and lead author of a research letter published February 19th in the journal JAMA entitled Percentage of Opioid Tests Available in U.S. Injury Death Investigations 2021. Reporting for KBOO News, I'm Doug McVeigh.
To KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The nominating committee meets on the second Tuesday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO's Metal Marathon, the Metal March, is back once again. And that means brand new metal merch. Go to kboo.fm/metal to check out all KBOO's new metal merch featuring exclusive artwork provided by local tattoo artist and musician at Unicron Artworks. This year's Metal Marathon is live on KBOO, Friday, March 14th at 8 p.m. through Saturday, March 15th at 6 a.m. Get your very own limited edition 2025 Metal March Metal Merch and listen to every installment of the Metal Marathon at kboo.fm/metal and support metal on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
And welcome to Trans Positive. Tonight we're celebrating the Transgender Day of Visibility, and we have joining us Rachel Crandall Crocker, the founder of T-Dove. So why don't we all go around and introduce ourselves?
Hi, I'm Emma. I use she and her pronouns.
I'm Nicolette. I use they, them pronouns.
I'm Sheila. I use she, her pronouns.
Hi there. I'm Rachel, and I use she, her pronouns.
Great. So to start things off, Rachel, why don't you tell us about the Trans Day of Visibility and why you started it?
Okay. I started the International Transgender Day of Visibility in 2009. I wanted a day that all trans people all over the world can come together and we could celebrate being trans. There is a lot of loneliness and isolation in the trans community, and I wanted to do something about that. Up until then, the only trans day was the Day of Remembrance. And that's when we remember our brothers and sisters who were killed. Well, I wanted a day that we could celebrate the living. And that's exactly what it is.
Great. Yeah, thank you so much for this holiday. I think that this is so important, especially right now in this current political climate that is outwardly attacking trans people. And I think now is really a good time to have and celebrate trans pride and trans joy. You know, trans joy is definitely a very real thing. And I think it's important now more than ever to be visible, to show that we're not backing down. So do you have any thoughts about, you know, whether T-Dub is more relevant this year than it may have been in the past?
Oh, sure. It is much more relevant than ever. People are trying to erase our community. And what we can do about that is to be visible. And I'm encouraging all trans all over to be visible. And that's what it's all about.
Yeah. I agree. Do you or anyone else want to share your thoughts on why visibility is so important for the trans community?
Yes, I would like to say something about that. I think that it is a follow-up on what Harvey Milk said about how to, this was during the days when, prior to his assassination in 1978, when he said, people feel a sense of alienation when they can think about LGBT people, but everybody probably has somewhere in their immediate family tree, up to including the first cousins, that are LGBT people. And so the importance of visibility is that people begin to recognize that this is not the other, this is not the stranger, this is not the alien, this is us and people that we love and people that we know. And if we are invisible to our families out of the fear of losing our family support or losing our friends or losing our jobs, then it's very easy to say this is such a micro minority that we can afford to pretend that they don't exist. And that was the strategy. The change now is that rather than being considered underrepresented in the general population, we're now considered to be not only a large segment of the population, but one that is taking over everywhere, more or less the way immigrants are being treated. And so now our visibility is paradoxically becoming the very way that they attack us, because they say, see what a big threat this is? You thought it was only a few people. Well, look at it. It's in your backyard. They're coming down in spaceships from Mars. It's, we've got to stop them. And so I would love to hear our guest today talk about the tension between visibility and invisibility, insofar as they are help us adapt and get support from other people.
Oh, sure. A lot of people in Washington want us to be invisible and is trying to scare us into that. And visibility is scary. However, visibility is the only way that we're going to show people exactly what you said, that we are you. And that's what Visibility Day is all about. We are you. And I consider it right in line with Harvey Milk. We are you and we're here. And that's what today is all about.
Can I bring up something right at this point, only because I have it right in front of my face? They, as an example of what we were just discussing, the Arkansas State Legislature has a bill in front of it, and I'm looking at who their sponsors are right here. And this is something, when I'll come back to the actual reading of some of the elements, but what it is designed to do is to not target medical transition, which is the thing that they've been so freaky about, that somehow minors are being forcibly and without their parents' knowledge transformed overnight into these aliens, these transgender people. But they have also said, we don't even want social transitioning. We don't want you to use their preferred pronouns. We don't want them to use their preferred names, and we don't want them to resemble the sexes. So this bill is designed to prevent socially transitioning a minor, and it is called HB 1668, to create the Vulnerable Youth Protection Act, and to authorize a civil action for social transitioning and castration, sterilization, or mutilation of a minor. And it has two different people, one female and one male, who brought this up. And this is targeting us directly and when I read the things that it includes, you will not believe it. It includes even giving someone a haircut that would make you resemble the other sex. So presumably, if you took someone who had assigned at birth designation of female and gave her a crew cut, you could be sued for up to, and there's a 20-year statute of limitations. Someone that gave you a haircut 20 years ago, you could still bring a civil action for damages that they socially transitioned you, perhaps without, this is how bad it's gotten. And that this is actually before a legislature seriously entertained shows how crazy everything has gotten.
It really is crazy. And that's happening in a number of states. However, even though all that, we have to be visible. We need to show that we're here and we are you. We're here and we are you.
Rachel, you started Transgender Day of Visibility 16 years ago, and it's turned into this huge international event. You've received all kinds of amazing awards and honors. Did you ever think that Transgender Day of Visibility would become such a huge phenomenon?
No way. I was hoping that a few people would like it. I never thought that a few million people would like it. However, what it turned into is wonderful. It's It's all over the world. And it will get larger every year.
Yeah, I think that kind of brings me to my next question, if you don't mind. So I remember this huge uproar last year in particular, where a lot of trans folks were just so upset because T-Dove happened to be on the same day as Easter. And I was just surprised that like so many cis people even were talking about it, because I remember for so many years it was like the vast majority of cis people didn't even know that T-Dove existed. It was just a big thing in the trans community. Right. So, yeah, sorry. Do you have a response to that? What do you think?
I think that last year was a great advertising tool for us. A lot of people were not aware of us before last year. However, because of what happened, they are aware of us. And I thank everyone for that.
Yeah, I'm thankful for that too. Yeah, I guess just, you know, what I'm wondering is, why is it suddenly drawing so much attention? Do you think it's just because of the backlash against trans people? Or do you think we're just doing a better job at being visible now?
I think we are doing a much better job at being visible. And I think that the legislator, Sarah McBride, is really helping with that. It's all of us all together.
What I'm curious about is two questions. The first is, how did you get it going right at the beginning? Who did you contact first? And how did it get its foothold in the door? And then second, what does visibility mean for us? What different avenues can we employ to become visible and to make sure that when we are visible, we're portrayed as being human beings trying to live our lives and not as a villainous threat undermining, let alone mutilating youngsters?
I started the Day of Visibility on Facebook, and I contacted trans leaders all over the world and told them about it and asked, are you in? And only a few of them said yes. However, then a year or two after that, it started to snowball and snowball and snowball. And it really turned into a movement, the transgender visibility movement. And visibility means to be free to show what you are. We don't have to hide anymore. I get calls from people asking if we should hide, and I said no. I want you to be safe. However, we will not be erased. We will not be erased.
That's wonderful. Were you inspired by Harvey Milk in any way? Did you feel that we were, because you know that we've been chopped off the back end of the LGBT things in government files. Now it goes LGB and then stops. That is a classic example of erasing it. And it even erased the name Enola Gay from the back end of the, so now it's just the Enola that dropped the bomb on Hiroshima.
That is so ridiculous.
So Transgender Day of Visibility, celebrated on March 31st, is celebrated all around the world, including the U.S., Canada, Mexico, France, the Netherlands, Brazil, even Argentina.
Everywhere. It's everywhere.
Yeah. So I was wondering a couple of things. Why did you choose March 31st as the Transgender Day of Visibility? And where's the most unusual place you've heard about it being celebrated?
Okay. I picked March 31st because it was far enough after the Day of Remembrance and far enough before Pride. I did not want to step on anyone's toes. I did not want to shut down anyone. And that's exactly why I picked the 31st. And I've received calls from people in Africa, even Saudi Arabia.
Wow.
Has it ever been celebrated in outer space, like up on the International Space Station, or?
That's a wonderful idea.
Because then we really could be coming down from outer space, like Sheila said.
Why don't we work on this for next year, okay?
Oh, great idea. Okay, great. I think it's Nicolette's turn to ask a question.
Let's see. I guess I wanted to ask, Rachel, if you could tell us a little bit more about your story, maybe your coming out. And I think I've also seen that you are the head of a trans group in Michigan, if I remember right. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Okay. I've always known I was really a girl for as far back as I can remember. I tried to come out to my mom and dad when I was 8, and they said that was the dirtiest thing I could possibly say. So I internalized it. I felt like I was the dirtiest thing ever. And I went back in the closet for 25 years. In my 30s, I started to come out again. And when I came out, I lost everything. I lost my marriage. I lost my money. I lost my job. So I thought about exactly what to do now. And that's when I came up with the idea about Transgender Michigan. And if all that did not happen to me, I would have probably never created the Day of Visibility. And that's me.
That's great. I'm so happy to hear your story. I thought it might be a nice idea if we could all go around and each share what visibility means to us. How about that?
Okay.
Whoever wants to go first.
You want to begin? Well, I wouldn't mind starting because this is such a touching story. And I lived back in Michigan in the 70s. When would that have been to our guest? When did you start that transgender thing going in Michigan?
It wasn't till 97.
Did you know a Dr. Nicolette, or Nicolini, Dr. Nicolini had a group going out in Detroit? I don't know if you were in Detroit, but that was the first contact that I had with any professionals that could advance my own transition. That would have been 1978.
Oh, I am not familiar with Dr. Nicolini.
Nicolini. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I am not. I wish I was. I went to groups all around for cross-dressers, and that's all I was able to find at that time.
That's so interesting. Well, my story is I went up to Seattle Counseling Service, which was there on Pike and Broadway, and they had a small transgender group. It had about four cross-dressers and one for sure transsexual, and I was kind of halfway in between at the time, and that was before even Marsha Botzer got her group going. And it's just so astonishing to me to think that was 1976. And
wow.
Of course, I always felt, this is what's so amazing, is so many of our stories are so identical, including the pain and the alienation and the shame. And because I used to identify with, you know, I'd go see Disney movies and I was always identifying with the girl in the movie. In fact, I'd walk out of the movie theater and felt like I was still her. That was the weirdest part, is there was like this overlay.
Yes.
Did you experience anything like that? It's like...
Yeah. For a short period of time after the movie, I was a Disney princess. And that was the best feeling for me in the world.
See, this is what's so incredible to me, is that I think that so many people, especially with our trans kids nowadays, they're looking at them like this is something coming from outside. Somebody's trying to recruit you into some craziness and then profit financially by your transition. And that is exactly the opposite. This is children that are forced to live in a pressure cooker of denial coming at them from outside saying, your feelings are completely invalid.
Right.
And we will find a way to not only tell you you don't get your wishes, but you want something that's awful. It's an affront. It's an evil thing. And you've been possessed by something that you should feel like this. Instead of saying, trust our feelings. We're not making this up. This is real. Okay. Well, that was my experience of disability. My disability was to be able to use even such a thing as something even suggestive of femaleness as somehow giving me enough of a pressure release valve. For instance, if I could wear non-gender specific tennis shoes, even something like that with disability.
I mean, I could go next and share a little bit. So I do relate to a lot of what you guys are saying, because I remember I was maybe 5 years old. I remember I was in my kindergarten class and, you know, seeing groups divided up into boys and girls. And I started thinking, you know, I know everyone tells me I'm a girl, but I don't feel like a girl. And I don't feel like a boy either. I feel like I'm somewhere in the middle, like in between. But because I had never heard of anyone else feeling that way, you know, I'd never even heard of trans people before, let alone non-binary. I felt like it was just something that I couldn't even discuss. Like, I couldn't even tell anybody that I felt this way.
Exactly.
Exactly. And so I remember it was sometime in the 2010s, maybe around 2014 or so, that like I knew that trans people existed, but I'd never heard of non-binary before. And so I kind of just like joined like some trans Facebook groups and asked people if anyone ever felt the same way. And that's when I learned the word non-binary. And and I thought, you know, that sounds exactly like what I've been feeling my whole life, that I felt like I couldn't even talk about. And for me, that's why visibility is so important, is to show others like us that, you know, you're not alone. It's okay and valid to be who you are. And that's why I try to be visible, not just for my own benefit, but for other people's benefit, by telling people my gender identity and my pronouns, dressing in a way that feels authentic to me, wearing the non-binary colors or the trans colors, whatever it takes to show people this is who I am. And if you relate, if you feel the same way, that's okay. You should be visible too.
Yes, that's okay. That's okay. Exactly.
Emma, what about you?
So I first became really interested in being visible, I guess, in my 20s. I started hanging out with transgender people. There were some really notable transgender people that I hung out with in my 20s in Minneapolis, where I was from and living. And getting to know those older trans folks, people who were transitioning, I mean, all the way back to your time, Sheila, like not the 70s, but the 80s and the 90s, people who were transitioning in the late 80s and the early 90s, really gave me a lot of confidence and a lot of hope, because I didn't know if something like that was possible. I remember the first time I met a transgender lady when I was like maybe 20 years old, and she was so beautiful. I mean, she looked like a transgender lady. Like, she looked like somebody who had transitioned when she was an adult, and she'd had maybe a couple of surgeries, and she was very pretty, but what I really remember about her was that she was very confident. And I remember how confident she was and how she looked like a woman, and that just made me so hopeful to know that that was something that was possible for any of us. I had no idea how to do that at the time. I had to learn all about it, but I mean, I knew ever since I was a little kid that I was female. I mean, I knew, and when I was before I reached adolescence, I thought that when I became an adolescent, that I would just magically turn into a girl. That was just what I believed. So that was kind of how I became visible. What about you, Rachel? How did you become visible?
In my 30s, at within the 90s, I tried to keep it inside of me. However, I was no longer able to. I had to come out. So I came out in the late 90s and I lost everything. However, it was being visible like that that's started Transgender Michigan and later Transgender Visibility Day. That was how I did it.
Oh, great. Thanks. So Nicolette just asked the last question about visibility. So Rachel, we've been joined today by Rachel Crandall Crocker, the founder of Transgender Day of Visibility. Rachel, thanks so much for joining us. If people would like to find out more about TDEV, where can they go to find out about
it? The internet or the Transgender Michigan website. Or they can contact me directly. I don't mind that.
Okay, great. We'll make sure to include that in the show notes. Rachel, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure having you on Trans Positive.
Thank you so much.
Rachel, thank you for your great effort for so many people, because of that effort, you're saving a lot of people the sense of that they're all by themselves when they do come out. So thank you for what you've done for the community.
Sure.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us, and thank you for starting T-Dove and making such a big difference in the lives of a lot of trans people.
Thank you, everyone. Okay, now.
Well, this is always so sad for me to hear what we lose by being visible, because the paradox is that we are socially rewarded by being invisible and heavily sanctioned if we become visible. Yet our program is to not only become visible to ourselves, but to ask other people to be visible also so that they can be supported. And even the idea of coming out and letting something of your reality come forward is something that should be so natural. We talk about freedom of expression or freedom of speech in this country, but what about freedom of being? Can anything be more oppressive be imagined than the idea that if I ever told anybody what I was and what that somehow or other that would be the gateway to persecution? And the fact that now that's even more true than when we were invisible shows me the deep human tragedy involved in this and the massive misperception that other people have. And I keep thinking, what's the motivation? What are they so afraid of? And so I would like to ask everybody the question of just exactly why are we so threatening to other people, unless there is a sense that gender is maybe not the obvious concept that they always say, you know, well, so obvious, there's men and there's women. Well, if that was true, why are they so afraid? What, in other words, why are they afraid someone's going to tip that thing upside down and it's going to destroy their whole world? What's the benefit of living a new biblical?
Okay. Yeah. So I can give my thoughts. I learned a lot in the gender studies and queer studies classes that I took in college that, you know, a lot of it does stem from the patriarchy and from misogyny. You know, cis men have been in charge of the world for centuries. And one of the ways that they keep cis men in power is by oppressing anything that they consider feminine, whether that be cis women, trans women, AFAB people that are trans. To them, if anything is not a cis man, it is therefore inferior. So the idea of women and trans people gaining power is a threat to the patriarchy. So not only are cis men threatened by it, but they convince cis women to be threatened by it as well, telling them that our society is going to crumble if cis men are not in total power and control. That's my thoughts on it anyway.
Great. Thanks. I'd like to answer that too. So, I think that there's something about gender that's just so hardwired in our evolutionary framework. I mean, I think that there's something about how we understand our gender identity in relationship to our biological function as animals that reproduce, and also the seed of sexual desire and sexual attraction is something that's such an overwhelming biological drive that it's really for so many people who exist on this planet, the thing that they know the most about themselves is they know their biological drive to reproduce, and they know what they believe to be their gender identity. And they feel like those two things are almost as real as like gravity. They're as foundational to them as gravity, and they believe it's as true as that when they die, they're going to go to heaven. I mean, their idea about their gender identity is so firmly rooted to their religious belief too. I mean, they're tied in together. They're just like, they're inseparable. And I think that they see us as just this incredible threat to everything that forms the foundation of their life as they know. I mean, they just can't possibly, it's the same thing that people face when they're facing homophobia. I mean, when people face homophobia, they're being confronted with the idea that there's some people on Earth who are born with same-sex attraction rather than attraction to somebody who's, you know, a different gender from, and it's just such a challenging thought for so many people. It's very challenging, and I think that our existence is a real challenge to those people, especially the people who really associate their gender identity in such a foundational way with their fundamental religious beliefs. And so I think we're a real challenge. I mean, I think that's part of what we exist, though, is we exist to help people like open up a little bit about the world, because the world is so much bigger than you think it is. And it's so much more diverse than you know it is. And when we look back, and if you study anthropology and you look at human history over the hundreds of thousands of years we've existed in so many different kinds of ways that you can't even believe it. I mean, just in written human history and recorded human history, there's been so many different ways that we've existed. And so it's good to like kind of let go of some of your preconceptions, because a lot of the things that you think are foundational about the world aren't really. What about you, Sheila?
Well, if I can answer my own question, my thought is that we're all raised in many cases, I can't say all because now it's no longer true, but the idea of being raised by both a male and a female, both of whom were dependent upon for our very existence as children. And Freud goes back to this Oedipus complex that really all children first identify with their mothers, and then gradually, especially if you're male, you do this little transition thing where you say the mother is not me, and the father, although superior to me and I can't compete with him, I am still part of that gender. And especially if you see how we raise young boys as opposed to young girls are allowed a wider sphere of gender expression without necessarily, in other words, we just to say tomboy is much less pejorative than to say that somebody is a sissy. Sissy is something that nobody likes to be called. And so any more than wuss. So what's very intriguing that somewhere along the line, anything that is female, including the female genitalia, is sanctioned, is considered something really nasty. And so immediately we start disparaging female and saying male good, female bad. And there's something about that, and I think we're trained to it. So I think that the reason the anxiety is there is that everybody has gone through that traumatic training in the course of their own identification with who they finally decided they needed to be. And the thought that admitting that they've been indoctrinated into their gender identity is so anxiety producing, because it throws them back into that original state of where they didn't know what they were. And if they did identify wrong, all that shame and guilt comes back. And that's why I think a lot of the people that are most threatened by LGBT people are people who have elements of that within themselves or within their own developmental period.
Hello, you are listening to a special program of Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio. Yesterday was the Transgender Day of Visibility. My name is Emma Lugo, and I am a co-host here of Transpositive. I'm also one of the president emeritus of KBOO Radio, having served as board chair for 2 years. And we are celebrating Transgender Day of Visibility, which just happened yesterday. Transgender Day of Visibility is a day dedicated to recognizing and uplifting the transgender community around the world. It is a day of joy, a day of visibility, a day for community, and for reflecting on the incredible contributions of transgender people everywhere. Whether you're trans, non-binary, questioning, or an ally, we're so glad to have you with us. We just heard an interview that we had with Rachel Crandall Crockett. Rachel was the is the founder of Transgender Day of Visibility. And also joined by co-hosts Sheila and Nicolette. And we're just talking about, what does it mean to be visible? I want to talk a little bit about the meaning of visibility. Transgender Day of Visibility was founded in 2009 by Rachel Crandall Crocker as a day to celebrate trans lives. In contrast to the more solemn observance of Transgender Day of Remembrance, which was started by Gwendolyn Ann Smith, we've also had her on the show, TDOR is about remembering those who we've lost to violence and discrimination. And TDOV, the Transgender Day of Visibility, is about honoring those who are here, who are thriving, and who are living their lives boldly and beautifully. Visibility really matters. It allows transgender people, especially youth, to see themselves reflected in the world. It challenges outdated narratives and shows that we exist in every profession, in every community, and in every walk of life. It also reminds us that while being seen is powerful, it must go hand in hand with safety, support, and systemic change. We know that transgender experiences are diverse. Some of us are out and proud, others are private, or navigating safety concerns. Some of us have found immense joy in transition, and others are still finding their way. Every journey is valid, and today, well, yesterday really, but today we want to highlight some of the many ways transgender people bring beauty, resilience, and brilliance to the world. Take, for example, Leigh Finke, the first openly transgender lawmaker in Minnesota, who has championed legislation to protect LGBTQ plus rights. Or Ellie Hearns, a Black trans activist, fighting for safety and justice for all transgender people. Or the many artists, musicians, scientists, and educators making their mark in every field imaginable. And of course, think of Sarah McBride, the first openly elected United States House of Representative legislator who is a transgender woman and has become the subject of national controversy because of her visibility. Sarah has said that she's proud of being a transgender woman and that she's there to serve the people of Delaware. We also recognize the very small everyday victories. A transgender person who wears their favorite outfit for the first time. Or a young non-binary student who finds the name that feels just right. And the elders in our community who have paved the way for the rights we have today. Each of these stories is a testament to the beauty of our transgender existence. But visibility is not just about being seen. It's also about being supported. The transgender community is rich with love, care, and solidarity. From mutual aid networks to local support groups, we are finding ways to uplift each other
especially in the face of increasing challenges. For those listening who may feel alone, know that you are not. There are people who see you, who believe in you, who are fighting alongside you. Trans joy is revolutionary, and it thrives in spaces where we can be fully ourselves without fear. And to our allies, visibility isn't just for trans people. It's also about how cisgender friends, family, and coworkers show up for the trans people in their lives. That means listening, advocating, and standing up against transphobia whenever and wherever it appears. Some ways that you can celebrate Transgender Day of Visibility year-round include sharing transgender stories, art, and history. Whether it's a book by a trans author, a film, or a personal story, amplify transgender voices. That's something that we've been doing here on Trans Positive for 10 years now. We try every 2 weeks to share transgender or non-binary stories. And we have lots of authors on Transpositive. You can listen to us. We play on the first and the third Tuesdays of every month at 6 p.m. And you can also go through the archive of Transpositive and you can find lots of authors that we've interviewed, lots of speakers, public figures, because these stories really matter. And you can also just go online and find an incredible number of resources. It's so easy right now to learn about our transgender history and our transgender visibility. So that's a great way that you can support the transgender community. If you can, also support transgender-led organizations like the Transgender Law Center, the Sylvia Rivera Law Project, and local LGBTQ plus centers who do vital work year-round, like the Q Center and Basic Rights Oregon, and the different queer organizations in the Portland metro area and beyond, like the Westside Queer Resource Center, or the Lower Columbia Q Center. And there are so many more that are out there working in Oregon supporting transgender and non-binary people. You can also reach out to transgender people in your life. If you know someone who's transgender, non-binary, and you just, if they're a casual friend, an acquaintance, maybe you could just tell them hi and let them know that you see them and that you care about them and that, you know that they matter. It's amazing how much kindness and compassion and positivity comes from just a kind word or a simple thought or a gesture. Especially in these times when transgender people are, for some reason, we're, like Rachel said a few minutes ago, we're so visible right now. In a way, we're more visible than we've ever been. But that's not necessarily a good visibility, but it is making us more visible. But if you can send somebody a kind word, it makes such a difference right now. Also, it doesn't hurt to educate yourself and others. Visibility is about learning and growing together. And every conversation that we have helps push the world toward greater understanding and reflection and acceptance. Today, we're honoring every transgender person who has ever struggled to be seen, and every trans person who has stepped into their one. At a time when our world is on fire, and there are many topics we can and should be covering, we will get to as much as we can with our limited resources as a community-produced radio show. We would encourage you to read Erin in the Morning, hosted by transgender journalist Erin Reed, for the most up-to-date information on what is happening in this ever-changing landscape of transgender news. And if you're looking for resources for support, we would encourage you to start with the Transgender Legal Survival Guide, which can be found in the show notes. TransPositive is a bi-weekly program in Portland exploring themes important to those who identify as transgender, gender non-binary, gender non-conforming. TransPositive tries to connect listeners with the ongoing activist, arts, culture, and dialogue happening in Portland and beyond. Make your voice heard. TransPositive is open to new and experienced programmers, guests, and events you want our community to know about. We are an open collective. Anyone identifying as trans, gender non-binary, and gender fluid is welcome to be part of our collective. For more information, please contact us at transpositivepdx@gmail.com. You can also like us on Facebook at Transpositive PDX, and you can listen to our program archives online at kboo.fm and look for Transpositive. We have over 10 years of programming here on KBOO. So thanks again so much for listening to Transpositive, and don't forget to support your local community radio station.
Transgender people don't live here.
I've never met anyone who's transgender.
I swear I don't know someone who's transgender.
Transgender and non-binary people like me hear this all the time.
But according to the HRC Foundation, there are more than 2 million transgender people in the United States.
We live in every community across this country.
You might be surprised to hear that there are more transgender and non-binary people in the United States than there are
Starbucks,
McDonald's, and Walmart locations combined.
In fact, if you put us all together,
there'd be more non-binary and transgender folks than the populations of DC,
or Nebraska,
or Maine,
or Idaho,
or West Virginia.
As a matter of fact, 15 states have a lower population than the amount of trans folks in the US.
So here are a few things to keep in mind.
You don't always know when a person is trans.
But we're your neighbors,
your coworkers,
your students,
your customers,
and even your friends and family.
We exist in every culture, todas las culturas, throughout human history.
And while we're more visible than ever before,
sometimes you just don't see us.
So when you hear about politicians pushing for discriminatory bills,
know this, these bills address problems that aren't even real.
Problems that don't actually exist.
But we do.
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 do.
And we need your support.
I'm Molly, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
Broadcasting from